What is perplexing about this is that we don't know why this has happened. We've gotten no information from Customs and Border Protection.
A trip to college has taken a turn for some Chinese students. It's Tuesday, September 3rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australian fish without water. India travels toward electricity. More trade frustration for farmers, a floating water laboratory, and cardboard boats. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Officials at Arizona State University in Phoenix want to know what happened to nine of their students who were arriving from China for the latest semester of classes. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with a spokesperson from the school, Brett Hovell.
So over the last couple of weeks, as students were starting to come back to school for the start of the fall semester, nine Chinese students were stopped at Los Angeles International Airport by Customs and Border Protection, interviewed, had their phones taken away and searched, and then were denied entry to the country. They have all returned safely to China at this point. What is perplexing about this is that we don't know why this has happened. We've gotten no information from Customs and Border Protection. We have tried to work with all levels of U.S. government, including sending letters to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and the acting Secretary of Homeland Security. We have not gotten an official or unofficial response from the federal government as to why this happened.
What have you asked, and how many times have you asked, and who have you asked?
Primarily, what we're looking to find out is what are these students accused of that would keep them out of the country, and is there any way we can rectify the situation so that they can come back and resume their studies?
What have you been told by Customs and Border Patrol?
Nothing. We have gotten the same generic statement that Customs and Border Patrol needs to patrol the border, and there's a whole bunch of reasons someone might be denied entry. We've gotten the same basic statement that they've been sending to the media. There is no detail as to what has occurred here.
Is there anything in what these students have either done or said or put online or anything like that that might cause this action to send them back to China or not let them into the country?
You know, I certainly don't know every detail of everything they've ever said or done. And of course, I guess anything is possible. But there was a rumor that one news organization picked up that it might have had something to do with academic dishonesty. I can tell you that at ASU, we take those issues very, very seriously. And in this situation, all of the students were academically eligible to return to Arizona State University.
What had they been studying, and what have they been studying?
Well, they're still studying. As a matter of fact, we're going to be working with them to take some of their classes online. We're going to be working with them. Many of their professors are helping with independent studies so that they are able to continue advancing at Arizona State University. A couple of them, in fact, were on track to graduate this fall. One of our students actually was only 9 credits away from being able to graduate. So this is, you know, I mean, it would never be good when this happened, but it seems particularly cruel and troublesome at this particular moment. These are all undergraduate students. To your question, they're studying a number of different things. It's not all one area of study. There are some business students. There are some engineering students. I saw one is studying supply chain management, which is actually a really interesting program we have at ASU, and obviously at a number of other places too. There's no particular pattern that we've been able to discern there either. What I think I want people to know is that we have a large number of students from China studying at the university. A large number of international students come to Arizona State University, as well as universities all over the country. And we find those types of partnerships where we are helping to provide education and we are learning as much from our students in many cases as they are learning from us. We find that very useful and positive, and one of the things that make studying at a great American university as great as it is. And so we remain committed to working with these students and working with future students who desire to come to ASU.
Ira Melman speaking via Skype with Arizona State University spokesman Brett Hovell. As this story developed during a U.S. federal holiday weekend, VOA Asia was not able to reach the Customs and Border Patrol for a detailed comment, but the agency did issue a brief statement to the Arizona Republic newspaper Friday, saying the Chinese students were deemed inadmissible to the United States based on information discovered during the CBP inspection. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. A new week, new protests in Hong Kong. U.S. promotes free and open Indo-Pacific at naval exercise. How Hong Kong's most wanted bookseller escaped to Taiwan, and what's next? China lodges tariff case at WTO against United States. Rights group skeptical that Myanmar's military seeks justice. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A worsening drought is pushing parts of eastern Australia toward a fish Armageddon, according to senior politicians. Vast numbers of native fish died suddenly at Menindee, 100 kilometers west of Sydney, in January. In a desperate attempt to stop more mass fish kills, authorities are planning to set up Noah's Ark-style sanctuaries for threatened fish species. Phil Mercer casts his net for details from Sydney.
With not much rain on the horizon as well as record low river levels, there are fears eastern Australia will witness more fish dying at a higher rate than last summer. A million fish died at Menindee when a sudden drop in temperature caused algae to die. As the algae decomposed, oxygen was sucked out of the river, suffocating marine life. Farmers and conservationists accused the state government of allowing cotton growers to drain too much water from the Murray-Darling River Basin, one of Australia's key waterways. Officials, though, blamed a worsening drought. They've announced a multi-million dollar fish rescue plan to help avert an ecological disaster. The New South Wales Agriculture Minister Adam Marshall says vulnerable native fish will be relocated from the river to hatcheries for safety.
I can't sugarcoat it. It will be the equivalent of a fish Armageddon in New South Wales this summer. And I say that based on all the evidence. We will use hatcheries like this to create a modern-day Noah's Ark for native fish species in New South Wales.
The fish will be kept in captivity until river conditions improve. Environmental groups, however, say changes are needed to water policy and management to improve flows to ensure living, functioning rivers. Paul Humphreys, an ecologist at Charles Sturt University, believes the Noah's Ark plan probably won't work.
It's a terrible choice because it was actually floods that caused the problem that Noah was trying to solve, and here we're talking about droughts. It's also, I think, a problem because Noah was essentially being instructed by God, and I think in some ways we're playing God with this sort of stuff.
Australia is the world's driest inhabited continent. Scientists are warning that climate change not only threatens national treasures such as the Great Barrier Reef, but also critical river systems that sustain the nation's agriculture. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Lithuania says it had lodged an official protest to the Chinese embassy after some of its diplomats became involved in disruptions at a pro-Hong Kong demonstration in the capital, Vilnius, last month. There was no immediate comment from the Chinese embassy. You can stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're joining us today for VOA Asia. From e-rickshaws to cabs, commercial vehicles in India are leading the way in bringing electric vehicles into the mainstream. Anjana Pasricha reports the country's first electric cab service has launched in the Indian capital, New Delhi, as the government makes a big push toward electric mobility.
Mehek Chopra prefers commuting in app-based cabs so that she can read or catch up on work. She calls one from an all-electric cab service so that her ride does not add to the fumes from the millions of vehicles that clog one of the world's most polluted cities.
Any kind of step is a good step, be it planting a tree or, you know, taking an electric cab, and rather not using my private vehicle, which is a petrol, and using electric cab. Yeah, I do think that I am actually contributing towards better Delhi.
The startup Blue Smart Mobility launched its service this year as tax incentives lower e-vehicle costs and make them viable. The government has also promised subsidies for charging stations and batteries.
In the long run, I mean, if you do the math, it checks out. I mean, the returns on electric mobility is about 3 years, much better for the environment. At the same time, it's much more efficient, to operate an electric car. So it's much cheaper to run the service.
Optimistic that electric cars are the future, Blue Cabs plans to have 1,500 taxis by the year end.
They want to shift to cleaner mobility, healthy food options, likewise healthy travel.
Some customers hope it will nudge private transport in the same direction.
When a lot of cabs are there which are viable, then the customer, the private car owner customer will also start to purchase it.
Cabs are not the only electric vehicles to make a debut, as India pushes to increase their numbers to meet two goals: tackle the deadly smog that shrouds its cities and reduce expensive oil imports. More than 1 million electric rickshaws have mushroomed in towns and cities, the largest number in the world. The inexpensive cost per ride has made them hugely popular with poor and middle-income commuters and led to brisk demand for manufacturers of these vehicles.
Because of large population and large requirements of last-mile connectivity, e-rickshaws are very, very suitable for that kind of usage. And that is why you see a geometric progression in growth.
And the affordable $2,000 price tag provides an option for those seeking a livelihood in the city.
I was a graduate but did not get a job, so I bought this e-rickshaw. It helps me run my household expenses.
Some rides are noisy but cheap, others more pricey and comfortable. But for a city whose dense traffic contributes to toxic smog, it is a ride in the right direction. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Coming up, some farmers are growing frustration. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia: the Indonesian government plans to close the eastern Indonesian island of Komodo to the public from January next year in a bid to conserve the rare Komodo dragon reptiles, the world's largest living lizard species. It's also hoped poaching will be reduced to allow recovery for deer, buffalo, and wild boar. Visitors are always welcome at VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, in 2018, the United States reached an agreement with Mexico and Canada, two of its biggest trading partners, to replace the 1994 North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. The new USMCA trade agreement is billed as more balanced and reciprocal. But as VOA's Kane Faribault reports, the lack of a vote in the U.S. Congress to ratify the agreement is a source of frustration for U.S. farmers already reeling from a trade war with China.
The biannual Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, one of the largest agricultural shows in the world, provides an opportunity to get a look at the latest and greatest trends in the industry. But this year, it's also a venue for U.S. farmers to raise their voices in the debate over international trade.
It's important for farmers in Illinois to understand how important the export markets are to their profitability. We export more corn out of this state than any other state does.
Tricia Braid's Illinois Corn Growers Association transformed their display tent at this year's show into an exhibit on the importance of the United States-Mexico-Canada, or USMCA, trade agreement.
In the decade that I've been working with the corn growers, this is the first time this action here at the Farm Progress Show has focused on trade.
We are texting, emailing our congressmen today, asking them to vote yes.
Part of that action is registering farmers on site to a network that will let them air their concerns directly with their lawmakers.
We have a call to action campaign. We're using a phone-based system. When they sign up, then they'll be able to be directly contacted to their members of Congress and the senators to ask them to ratify USMCA as soon as they come back from the August recess.
For Southern Illinois farmer Jim Rabin, the guaranteed access to markets in Canada and Mexico and the impact on prices the USMCA can provide is even more important this year, as wet weather during the planting season jeopardized crop production.
For our area and probably for our farm, probably 20-25% that would prevent plants. And then there was also failed acres later on that either they were underwater or for whatever reason, but another 10%.
Like most farmers, Rabin is frustrated by uncertainty created by current U.S. policy and says other buyers, such as China, are looking at the USMCA as an example of U.S. trade reliability.
To me, it's a no-brainer. It should have already been passed. If it wasn't for politics, it would have been passed.
I believe today if it were put on the floor of the House, it'd get a majority in both caucuses. It's a great agreement and very much needed for the U.S.
U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue told those he met with at the Farm Progress Show he understands their concerns and wants the USMCA trade agreement passed quickly. However, speaking with reporters alongside members of the Illinois congressional delegation, he said the fate of the agreement is out of the hands of the Trump administration.
Congress has to ratify this. These guys behind me know that. But it is the Speaker of the House who has to introduce that.
When and if it will be introduced when Congress reconvenes in September continues to add to the uncertainty farmers face in a season many say is already filled with too much of it. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Decatur, Illinois.
This news break from VOA Asia. China has lodged a case against the United States with the World Trade Organization over U.S. import duties. The Chinese Commerce Ministry said Monday the latest 15% tariffs imposed by the United States violate the consensus reached by leaders of China and the U.S. in a meeting in Osaka. You'll never find a fee or tax to visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a new floating laboratory on board a boat on the Potomac River, not too far away from our VOA studios, is keeping tabs on the water quality that flows through the nation's capital and surrounding area. A local environmental group, the Potomac River Keeper Network, is collecting water samples at several sites to measure the amount of bacteria that cause pollution. As VOA's Deborah Block reports, the data will be used to help clean up polluted areas in the future, and it's already informing the public when it's safe to swim in the river.
Carl Scheider is a volunteer for the Potomac Riverkeeper Network, who takes weekly water samples on the Alexandria, Virginia side of the Potomac River, outside of Washington. He is also measuring for acidity, cloudiness, and water temperature.
I got 28.0 Celsius.
The water quality here deteriorates after stormwater runoff contaminates the river. At a nearby marina, Dock Master Chip Johnston is the informal Potomac River watchdog.
Cities need to pick up their sewage. Every time it rains, it comes right down in the river.
The 650-kilometer-long river primarily flows through Washington, Maryland, and Virginia. The Potomac used to be very polluted, but cleanup efforts in recent years have greatly improved the water quality. Potomac Riverkeeper Dean Nalyuks regularly patrols the river and goes after groups that violate clean water laws.
There's still threats to water quality improvements that I think if we're going to have clean water for future generations, we need to be vigilant and continue to be persistent.
Including at another site in Alexandria that is next to a park. Here, petroleum residue from a gas plant that closed years ago is leaking into the water. The plant was owned by the city of Alexandria, which says it has been working to solve the problem and clean up the area.
It's a public health risk, and we
got legislation passed that forced the city to fix that by 2025.
Schneider has taken this week's water samples to the floating laboratory boat, where they are being analyzed for bacteria and water clarity.
Everything that was on the roadways and sidewalks and parks and lawns all flows into the river.
The results are placed on Swim Guide, a website and app that tracks water quality on thousands of beaches around the world.
The main goal is to let people know when it's safe to go in the river, when it's not.
The Potomac Riverkeeper says everyone needs to help keep the river safe.
Not throwing plastics or pollution in our waterways. So I think just kind of working at that local and community level is really, really important.
So the Potomac River can be enjoyed for years to come.
It's a fantastic, beautiful river, and you see all different environments of the river, from waterfalls through larger estuaries to the tidal Potomac, which surrounds Washington.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
And while we're on the topic of being on the water, an unusual regatta took place in Northern Virginia as thousands gathered in Reston to watch a cardboard boat race. More than 150 participants used duct tape, cardboard, and their imagination and engineering skills to stay afloat as long as possible. Maxim Moskalkov went to Reston to watch the extraordinary regatta.
Tensions were high as more than 150 amateur boat builders launched their cardboard craft into a lake in the northern part of Virginia. The idea was to build a cardboard boat, fast and durable enough to win a race across Reston's Lake End. But really, just staying afloat was a win.
And here they come to the dock, here they come, and they've done it!
The regatta was organized by the local Reston Historic Trust and Museum.
Well, this is called the Lake End Cardboard Boat Regatta, where people build life-size boats out of cardboard and duct tape, and they race against each other. And it's a project that we started two years ago. It's our third one. And we wanted to build a community event that involved families and local businesses and nonprofits that everybody can enjoy together.
There are teachers and priests, office workers and artists, adults and teenagers here. Out of 73 cardboard boats, only 55 met the specific criteria to enter the race. The only materials builders could use were cardboard, duct tape, glue, water-resistant paint, and special coating. More than 2,000 spectators came to watch.
We just like doing fun and crazy stuff, so we heard cardboard boat regatta. And we said this year we want to build something new. We want to improve what we did before. And, oh, by the way, we'd like to try paddle wheels.
First of all, we're here to win, obviously, right? Like, you can tell. It's very fun. Like, look around. You don't need a real reason to come here and do this. It's just fun.
Christian and Cole represent one of the local churches at the regatta.
We based our boat off of the Noah's Ark. We built it. It was us two and a few of our friends from the church. We basically just used cardboard and tape and paint and paper animals that have kind of fallen off now.
Dragons and unicorns, cartoon characters and celebrities. Every boat was definitely unique, if not seaworthy.
I tell you what, there are a couple that are really marvelous. There is one that big catamaran, and it has painted on the side the picture of each beetle. They're going to have the song Yellow Submarine going on while they're rowing.
Steering a cardboard boat is not as easy as it might seem at first.
Yes, it was hard, but it was
very
fun.
Difficult. Super fun, though.
Yes.
Definitely recommend
it. And we stayed afloat.
Yes.
That's all we cared about.
Even the boat that managed to sink in the most spectacular way won its own honorary award, the Titanic Award. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Reston, Virginia.
And we've stayed afloat to this point. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also find us streaming each and every day at VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You'll also find us on the radio, like CCU Radio at National Chung-Cheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. We say hello to everyone there who is listening today. Thanks a lot and join us again. We also say thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ira Melman and Keith Lane. Thanks to Michelle Liu for streaming our program on Facebook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.